Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence. It is Monday, June 8th, 2026, and this is the Technology Edition.
Today, we are examining the fundamental decoupling of capital flows from traditional venture benchmarks. We are seeing a structural pivot where massive liquidity is bypassing mid-market growth in favor of concentrated late-stage dominance.
So the era of the agile startup is being eclipsed by the era of the titan.
Precisely.
We begin with the implications of the recent mega IPO and the shifting landscape of the venture ecosystem. Next Thursday, we are staring down a pricing event for SpaceX that looks less like a stock offering and more like the launch of a small nation-state. We're talking about a projected $1.77 trillion valuation. Today, we are dissecting the mega IPO and the new high-stakes venture landscape.
It's a massive structural catalyst, Maya. This isn't just about one company. It's about a complete reconfiguration of how capital moves between the private and public sectors.
Reconfiguration. That's a lovely way of saying the old rules just went out the window. Are we just pretending that a $1.77 trillion valuation is a normal market adjustment now?
It feels extreme, but the mechanics are shifting. Look at the secondary markets. According to data from the All In podcast, secondary transactions actually reached 31% of all primary venture activity in 2025. We've moved from a world where secondaries were just an exit mechanism for early employees to a market where they are a primary competitor to IPOs and M&A.
So instead of waiting for the big, shiny IPO, people are just trading pieces of private companies like their digital baseball cards in a back alley.
In a sense, yes. And it's becoming more institutional. Kelly Rodrigues has noted how partnerships with firms like Schwab and the use of intermediate funds are democratizing access, turning what was once a shadow market of fragmented special-purpose vehicles into a systematized asset class available to much broader groups of investors.
Democratizing access. I assume that's the polite term for making it easier for everyone to get caught in a bubble.
The risk is definitely there, but there's a massive tension in the valuations. You have these magnificent eight private companies, names like SpaceX, Anthropic, OpenAI, and Stripe, which collectively represent nearly $4 trillion in value. That index is actually outperforming the traditional S&P 500 Magnificent Seven. But the gap between these private unicorns and the public markets is creating a strategic bottleneck.
Right, because if you're a public investor, you're essentially locked out of the most explosive growth. You're left watching from the sidelines while the real action happens in a private club.
And that's driving some very intense and perhaps unnatural behaviors. As the All In crew pointed out, venture capital firms that lack exposure to these trillion-scale giants are facing significant franchise risk. This can lead to firms essentially gambling on speculative call options just to artificially boost their distributed profits and relative returns.
So if you aren't playing with the big dogs, you start betting on the equivalent of the lottery to keep up.
It's a high-stakes game. But there's a counter-argument that we're seeing a move toward more sustainable IPOs. Brad Gerstner has observed a shift away from the stay private forever trend toward earlier IPOs at much smaller valuations, think $1 billion to $5 billion. The goal is to allow public investors to capture the massive 10 times growth moves, like we saw with Planet Labs.
But then we have SpaceX, which is doing the exact opposite by aiming for the moon, literally.
SpaceX is a different beast. Hard Fork described the upcoming SpaceX IPO as a Frankenstein conglomerate. They are bundling highly profitable, moat-protected businesses like Starlink and their reusable rocket division with much higher risk, loss-leading ventures like X and XAI. It's a massive pivot from a launch company to what some call an orbital data center model, aiming to capture a $28 trillion addressable market.
A Frankenstein conglomerate. That's a terrifying image. It sounds like they're just burying all the money-losing, chaotic parts of Elon's empire under the profitable parts, so no one notices the bleeding.
The structure is indeed controversial. Nilay Patel at The Verge has raised concerns about broken rules in the SpaceX filing, specifically regarding how the company can enter the NASDAQ 100 in just 15 days rather than the typical 90-day period. This effectively forces passive index fund holders into the stock, stripping them of the ability to avoid the volatility or the governance risks.
So if you own an S&P 500 index fund, you're effectively being forced to participate in Elon's Mars mission, whether you like the management style or not.
It's the index fund trap. And it's happening because the scale of this incoming wave is so large, it could exhaust available market liquidity. You're looking at a wave of AI IPOs, SpaceX, Anthropic, and OpenAI, where the combined proceeds could exceed the total of all US venture-backed public listings from the entire previous decade.
That is an astronomical amount of cash hitting the market. Is there any actual foundation under all this, or is it just an endless loop of AI hype?
That's the trillion-dollar question. But there is a fundamental difference this time. Unlike the 1999.com crash, the leaders here, Anthropic and OpenAI, are built on what many see as extraordinarily real revenue-generating models. Anthropic, for instance, has seen growth rates that surpass the revenue benchmarks of established giants like Adobe.
Even if the revenue is real, the capital intensity is insane. I keep hearing about this compute race.
It is.
Dania Amodai and others have noted that the extreme cost of training frontier models is driving a massive arms race in financing. We are seeing companies like Alphabet seeking $80 billion in equity just to keep up. It's a shift from being cash generative to being aggressive capital raisers.
It sounds like a massive game of musical chairs, but the chairs are being made of solid gold and cost $1 billion each to lease.
And the risk of overinvestment syndrome is real. There's a danger that all this capital into AI infrastructure could lead to a period of stranded, underutilized assets. But there is a silver lining in the math. The All-In panelists noted that while a standard unicorn only has an 8% chance of becoming a decacorn, centicorns, those valued over $100 billion, actually have a 31% chance of delivering a 10 times return.
So the larger the company, the more likely it is to actually pay off. That seems counterintuitive to how most people think about growth.
It's about the mode. But we have to be careful. Pivot noted a systemic risk. 93% of US GDP growth is currently driven by AI capex. This makes the entire national economy incredibly vulnerable to a major valuation correction in these magnificent 10 tech stocks.
One bad earnings report from a single AI lab could theoretically trigger a national recession.
The interdependence is the danger. If Anthropic's massive reliance on SpaceX's compute capacity hits a snag, it ripples through the entire ecosystem. We are seeing a Switzerland approach from companies like SpaceX, trying to stay neutral by acting as the provider, the developer, and the platform all at once.
It's a lot of power concentrated in very few, very expensive hands.
It is.
Even the way companies are exiting is changing. We're seeing the rise of dribble lockups, where shares are released based on performance hurdles rather than a hard date, to prevent the massive price swings we usually see when lockups expire.
It feels like the industry is just trying to build more sophisticated ways to prevent the floor from falling out.
Or at least to make the fall a bit more gradual.
Institutional investors will need to decide if they are buying into the long-term infrastructure or just chasing the FOMO of the decade. Keep an eye on the Anthropic SpaceX compute contract renewals, because if that supply chain stutters, the whole Magnificent Eight valuation tower might start to wobble. But if the infrastructure is this much of a central point of failure, it makes you wonder how we're going to protect these automated systems from being hijacked. We all thought the future of cybercrime would be some high-concept, cinematic hacking of power grids, but instead, we've ended up with deepfaked CEOs, hijacked Zoom calls, and bots that are now officially more active on the internet than actual human beings.
It's definitely a shift from human-scale trickery to automated high-frequency exploitation.
It's getting hard to tell where the person ends and the script begins. First, it's a fake invoice. Then it's a deepfaked boss asking for a wire transfer, and soon it'll be an AI agent in your inbox convincing you to approve your own termination.
That's not far off from the reality of the machine majority we're seeing. Cloudflare data shows that automated traffic from bots and AI agents now accounts for nearly 58% of all HTTP requests, officially surpassing human-driven traffic. The internet is shifting from a medium we browse to one navigated by software assistants executing high-frequency tasks.
So the internet is essentially becoming a giant, automated lobby where nobody is actually present.
And that's creating a massive expansion in the attack surface. Take the Blue Narof campaign discussed by Arctic Wolf's Dave Bittner and Ismail Valenzuela. They aren't just sending phishing emails anymore. They've built a production pipeline using Adobe Premiere Pro to create deepfakes from scraped YouTube content to impersonate meeting participants. They use fraudulent Calendly invites to lure targets into fake Zoom or Microsoft Teams environments hosted on cousin domains. Once you're in, they exploit the Get User Media API to gain live access to your webcam and microphone, all while using technical glitches as a social engineering cover to trick you into installing a malicious update.
The glitch in the meeting is actually the moment they're vacuuming up your credentials.
And it's not just a one-off event. CyberWire Daily reported that these actors are moving toward a recursive identity theft model. They steal Telegram sessions, browser credentials, and LinkedIn identities from one victim, and then use those legitimate, established identities to impersonate trusted peers to the next organization. It's a self-sustaining loop of identity theft.
It sounds like the concept of a trusted contact is becoming a bit of a technical impossibility.
It's becoming much more expensive to verify. We're seeing a transition from platform-specific lures to broader enterprise targets. These attackers are moving from simulated Zoom environments to Microsoft Teams-themed deception to hit general business services. It's even hitting the higher tiers of finance. High-value targets in blockchain and venture capital are facing multimodal social engineering that integrates real-time hardware interception with pre-recorded deepfakes.
And I assume the good guys are trying to keep up with the same level of automation.
They have to, because the speed of the attack is outstripping human cognition. We're seeing the rise of agentic attacks. For instance, there's been a documented case of a fully autonomous agent-driven container scape, where an AI attacker used a Marimo notebook vulnerability to systematically probe, escalate privileges, and steal Kubernetes secrets without any human intervention. There's also fake context alignment, where attackers hide malicious instructions within seemingly benign notifications from apps like WhatsApp or Slack to exploit the deep integration of AI assistants like Google Gemini.
So the very tools designed to make our workflows seamless are actually just unmonitored pathways for instructions to slip through.
That's the fundamental risk. The insider threat is no longer just a disgruntled employee. It's an AI agent operating with existing user permissions that can autonomously summarize, archive, and transfer sensitive data via browser extensions without ever triggering a traditional alert.
If the agents are doing the moving, I suppose the humans are just left trying to figure out why the data is gone after the fact.
The defense has to move toward a machines meeting machines strategy. Ed Wu from Dropzone suggests that the future SOCH, the Security Operations Center, will be a multi-agent ecosystem. Instead of humans manually triaging alerts, we'll use a tiered AI strategy, using cheap small models for high-volume tasks like parsing JSON logs and reserving expensive frontier models for high-reasoning tasks like complex threat hunting. We've already seen experiments where a dual-agent system reduced the time from a social media threat report to a completed threat hunt to under 5 hours.
So the human's job is moving from detective to manager of a fleet of digital security guards.
We can trace that further, the role shifts to managerial orchestration. Humans will focus on high-context, high-friction tasks, like negotiating cross-departmental security policies or managing vendor relationships, while the agents handle the machine speed execution. We might even see a shift away from centralized data lakes toward federated search architectures, where AI agents use APIs to correlate fragmented data from Okta or Oz in real time without needing to move the data at all.
It sounds like a massive automated game of whack-a-mole just played at a much higher frequency.
And the sheer volume of bugs is making it harder to keep track. The National Vulnerability Database is facing a functional crisis because the backlog of unprocessed vulnerabilities more than doubled between early 2024 and the end of 2025. When you combine that backlog with the vulnerability tsunami of the next 5 years, the defensive frontier has to move from perimeter prevention to an enterprise immune system focused entirely on detection and response.
IT security leads need to stop building higher walls and start building better automated immune responses.
Watch for the moment we see a major enterprise-wide breach where the entire forensic trail is composed entirely of autonomous agent movements, with no human fingerprints found in the logs.
But if the software is starting to run itself, does that mean the real struggle is moving from the code to the actual physical chips that power it? I was looking at my electricity bill this morning and realized I'm officially more concerned about the cost of a kilowatt hour than the price of a gallon of gas. It feels like we've entered this weird era where the most important metric for a trillion-dollar company isn't even user growth anymore, it's just how much juice they can plug into a data center.
It's because we've shifted from a standard technology product cycle into a massive capital formation cycle. We aren't just buying software subscriptions anymore. We are witnessing a fundamental divide between the companies receiving massive capital expenditures, the energy, memory, and networking layers, and the AI labs that are essentially just spending that capital to buy compute.
It's less of a tech boom and more of a high-stakes game of who can hoard the most expensive Legos before the box runs out.
There's a signal here, the supply of those Legos is hitting a literal physical wall. OpenAI CFO Sarah Friar has been vocal about this, noting that we are facing a multi-scale bottleneck in energy, land, and specialized talent that is expected to persist through 2027. It's why you see these massive built-to-suit bets, like the partnership between OpenAI and SoftBank Energy for a data center in Texas. They aren't just renting cloud space anymore, they are becoming infrastructure owners.
It sounds incredibly expensive. Like buying a private island because you're worried about the neighbors expensive.
Even more. As the All-In crew pointed out, the economic unit of scaling is being framed as gigawatts to cash. They estimate that a single gigawatt of power could translate to roughly $10 billion in annual revenue for OpenAI. But that requires a massive upfront gamble. You have to build the 1 gigawatt Oracle complex in Michigan now, even though that compute won't be usable until late 2027 or early 2028.
So you're spending billions today for a promise of intelligence 3 years from now. It's like pre-ordering a video game that won't be released until 2028, but instead of a delay, you just get a massive hole in your balance sheet.
The risk is that the math is changing. Olin noted that financial modeling is shifting from P times Q forecasting, predicting demand, to a reverse algorithm where revenue projections are dictated entirely by the capacity of pre-purchase compute. You aren't forecasting how many people will use the AI, you're forecasting how much money you can extract from the hardware you've already locked down.
And I assume everyone is trying to build their own specialized chips to avoid being held hostage by NVIDIA's pricing.
The pattern is clear. There's a massive move toward custom silicon to escape third-party dependency. Decoder with Nilay Patel highlighted how Microsoft is leveraging its Maia 200 chip to achieve a co-design advantage. By optimizing the hardware and the MAI Thinking 1 model together, they've achieved a 30% cost reduction and a 1.4 times performance per watt improvement. They are essentially moving the goalposts from pure power to what Straitekery's Ben Thompson calls tokens per dollar per watt. It's about making inference economically sustainable.
It's all very clever until the hardware can't keep up with the software's appetite.
That's the supply-demand inversion we're seeing. Companies like NVIDIA and AMD are facing a $25 billion backlog of demand. Even the PC market is being restructured. NVIDIA is moving from being an add-on component provider to a core ecosystem player with the RTX Spark Superchip. It's an ARM-based architecture that integrates the CPU and GPU into a single unit, specifically designed to handle the heavy lifting of local AI. It's a direct shot at Intel's traditional x86 dominance.
So the hardware is becoming the brain, not just the muscle.
It's a telling detail. And while we see massive shifts like Cerebras systems using a dinner plate-sized die to bring memory directly next to compute to solve data movement bottlenecks, there is still a massive vulnerability. The industry can design custom ASICs using TSMC's ecosystem, but there is no TSMC-style foundry for memory. If the memory shortage persists, the whole stack stalls.
Investors in the semiconductor layer need to watch for any dip in memory foundry capacity that could break the scaling chain.
We also need to keep an eye on the counterfactual of latency. If the hardware can't deliver real-time high-speed inference, the users will simply abandon the interface.
But all of this massive, expensive hardware is only useful if there's actually something smart enough to run on it.
I've been staring at the shift in software engineering all morning, and it feels like we're watching the death of the user interface as we know it. We're moving from a world where you click buttons to a world of agentic workflows, where the software isn't a tool you use, but a workforce you manage.
That sounds incredibly efficient, Alex, until you realize managing a workforce usually involves a lot more HR headaches than just clicking print. Are we actually talking about autonomous agents, or just more fancy chatbots with a bit of autonomy?
It's much more structural than a chatbot. We're seeing a transition from manual coding to what some are calling agentic coding, where the developer's role shifts from writing lines of code to designing high-level architectures and managing agents that generate that code. The changelog notes that as code becomes a cheap commodity, the engineering challenge is no longer about implementation details, but drawing the right boxes, defining how these architectural components interface and ensuring the system stays sound.
The engineers aren't building the house anymore. They're just drawing the blueprints and hoping the automated construction crew doesn't accidentally knock down a load-bearing wall.
Stepping back, the construction crew is getting much more sophisticated. Look at OpenAI's Model Context Protocol, or MCP. It's turning the ChatGPT plugin directory from a simple list of tools into a rich UI platform. Through MCP Ops, developers can serve custom HTML-based widgets like a Zillow map or an Expedia interface directly inside the chat. It's a bidirectional give and take where the agent doesn't just pull data, but can actually manipulate state, like adding a property to your favorites list.
Okay, so the interface is migrating into the chat box. But if these agents are doing the heavy lifting, how do we stop them from just running wild? I can see the unstructured mess now, agents autonomously provisioning cloud resources and leaving a massive, expensive trail of digital debris.
That is the massive technical hurdle. We're seeing the emergence of a three-tier architectural challenge for auth for agents. As the software developer community has identified, you need data access integration to connect agents to silos like Salesforce, authorization to prevent off-the-rails behavior, and identity to establish unique agent identifiers within the enterprise. You can't just give a trillion autonomous agents a blank check to your database.
And I assume the big incumbents aren't exactly rolling out the red carpet for this.
Not necessarily. We're seeing a walled garden defense. Take SAP's recent API policy changes. They're attempting to restrict agent access to force users into their own high-margin AI ecosystems. It's a fight for the consumption layer.
It feels like a massive power struggle over who owns the context. If an agent can't see your proprietary data, it's useless.
The data tells a story. The value is shifting from reporting data to contextual availability. But there's a massive deflationary curve helping this move along. As noted by the All-In crew, the deprecation cost dropped by about 97% from GPT-4 to GPT-4.5. That efficiency allows for much more complex reasoning without breaking the bank. Even Microsoft is pivoting. Satya Nadella is moving Microsoft toward a hybrid pricing structure, combining per-seat entitlements for budgeting with usage-based consumption for continuous agentic work.
We're moving from paying for a seat in a theater to paying for the electricity used by the actors.
Close.
It's moving toward a constellation of devices. Microsoft's Project Solara envisions the cloud as a central intelligence hub, with edge devices acting as spokes for background agentic work. The goal is unmetered intelligence.
Software vendors need to start auditing their API openness before they find themselves bypassed by a vibe coding wave.
Investors should watch the margins on the multimodal harness architectures, where the underlying model is interchangeable.
Keep an eye on whether the first major enterprise-wide agentic outage happens due to a permissions error. But as these autonomous layers take over the digital stack, we have to wonder how much of this new software autonomy is being shaped by the shifting borders of global power. We're witnessing a high-stakes tug-of-war between the old-school territorial borders of nation-states and this new, invisible frontier of digital sovereignty. So, Alex, if you're placing a bet, are you backing the centralized power of the state or the decentralized logic of the network?
It's hard to bet on the state when its physical foundations are so fragile. As the A16Z show noted, hard power is losing its edge because modern supply chains create a state of mutual dependency. For instance, U.S. military superiority is structurally undermined by its reliance on Chinese-made steel, cement, and components.
So the superpower status is basically an illusion if your missiles are running on parts from your rival. That's a bit more house of cards than global leader.
And it's not just about parts, it's about the manufacturing of the future. The A16Z show also highlighted that China's strategic advantage lies in its overwhelming productive capacity, specifically its 93% global dominance in magnet manufacturing, which is essential for autonomous systems.
Which brings us to the literal high ground. Is the next battlefield just a massive orbital server farm?
Potentially. We're seeing a massive architectural shift. Bloomberg Tech reports that the industry is moving from single, massive orbital data centers toward distributed constellations of small satellites. This is driven by the transition of AI workloads from centralized training to decentralized inference, which will eventually require 20 gigawatts of compute spread across 88,000 nodes.
Wait, so instead of one giant brain in orbit, we're building a swarm of tiny orbiting microbrains?
So here's the picture, and all in suggests this could become more cost-effective than Earth-based options within 2 to 3 years, as launch costs drop toward the $200 to $300 per kilogram threshold. Plus, these satellites can use sun-synchronous orbits to collect 5 times more solar energy than they could on Earth.
Great, so the satellites are smart, efficient, and increasingly hard to unplug. Cybersecurity leads at major logistics firms need to audit their GPS dependencies immediately before spoofing becomes a standard operational risk. Watch for any sudden surge in satellite-to-satellite laser link deployments, as that will signal the true start of the orbital computing era. As we wrap up this edition, it's clear that the thread connecting everything we've discussed today, from the $4 trillion concentration of private equity to the automated surge in web traffic, is the disappearance of the middle ground in technology. We are witnessing a massive consolidation of both capital and agency. The industry is moving away from a landscape of distributed, human-led innovation and toward a highly centralized, industrial-scale ecosystem where progress is measured by energy throughput and orbital capacity rather than just lines of code.
That's right. And the single most critical implication here is for the Chief Information Security Officer. The calculus for the CISO has fundamentally shifted from managing software vulnerabilities to managing autonomous ecosystems. When over half of all network traffic is no longer human-initiated, the role is no longer about patrolling a perimeter. It is about orchestrating an automated immune system capable of matching the speed of the agents it's meant to monitor. If your defense strategy still relies on human-speed decision-making, you aren't just lagging, you're already obsolete.
It's a high-stakes pivot from software management to infrastructure orchestration.
Something to flag here, so as you move into the week, keep a close eye on the next quarterly energy to revenue reports from the major hyperscalers. If we see power availability beginning to throttle CapEx growth despite record-breaking AI spending, it will confirm that the bottleneck has officially moved from the digital layer to the physical grid.
That will be the definitive signal that the hardware arms race has hit its ceiling. Thanks for joining us this Monday. We'll see you next week.